welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and professional speaker, bringing you interviews, inspiration and information on writing, publishing options and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free Author 2.0 blueprint and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 232 of the podcast. And it's 30th of August, 2015, as I record this, about to hit autumn in the UK, and it's been raining, and but the conkers, the horse chestnuts, are really fat and they're starting to fall. And I do like autumn, so that's quite an exciting time. We haven't had much of a summer, to be fair. But who cares, because I love my work. But anyway, today I have an interview with Ricky Wolman from Written Word Media, the company that runs Free Booksy, Bargain Booksy and other advertising sites for books. And since we're all looking for other opportunities outside BookBub, it's super to talk to Ricky, and she is a marketing whiz, and it's a great interview. I've really enjoyed it. And there are tips for marketing fiction and nonfiction, why branding is a good thing, email marketing, reader engagement, and much more. And Ricky is also South African, so she's got a really lovely voice. In my opinion, I love the South African accent. So in publishing news this week, it's actually been quite momentous because there has been the first print-on-demand CreateSpace print bestseller. And it is a kid's book. It's called The Rabbit Who Wants to Fall Asleep, written and self-published by Carl Johan Erlin. And it's been an overall number one bestseller on Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And Publishers Weekly is reporting that it has now been picked up in a seven-figure deal. And Hugh Howey reported on this about, you know, the change that keeps happening, and that basically this is a game changer. And the reason it is a game changer is because the digital and digital disruption isn't relegated to ebooks. So this is really the first example of a print-on-demand book by CreateSpace becoming a bestseller. Now, I know that many people use Ingram Spark in order to reach bookstores, but what this has shown is that books bought online by word of mouth can be essentially bestsellers. And this has kind of radicalized the publishing revolution of print as well. So very interesting. I think what people have thought is that to get, and I certainly have been one of them, who considers getting into bookstores and, you know, selling print in bookstores to be the domain of traditional publishing. What this has shown is that you can, you know, more and more people are buying print books online. So we actually have a more level playing field. And if people are buying their print books online and not in bookstores, then yes, of course, a print book by an indie printed with a CreateSpace can be a success. So very exciting sort of change in the industry, and I will link to Hugh's post on that. What's interesting is Hugh kind of reflects on how he signed print deals a few years ago now with Wool before print on demand has become more mainstream. Very, very interesting story. And something that presumably will worry the traditional publishing industry far more than ebooks. Okay, so what else? This week I have literally just finished recording the final videos for the Creative Freedom course, which I will be launching very soon. And I'm really happy with the course, because it's sort of a culmination of the last 2 years of what I've been doing around business for authors and how to make a living with your writing, and trying to bring a business mindset into the creative world. And essentially, it's the hook of the course is, you know how to write a book, now learn to run a business as an author and actually make some money. So I essentially using my 13 years as a business consultant to bring that to the world of books and publishing as an indie. And of course, you can check out the free video series, which leads eventually to the course, starting with the video on 11 ways to make money as an indie author at thecreativepen.com/freedom. And that is a free video series that you should find useful. The second video is on productivity tips and how to get the writing done. So those are useful videos, getting a lot of good feedback. I also wanted this week to point you, since you're all audio fans, one of the best podcasts that I'm really loving at the moment is Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss's podcast, and he did an interview with Robert Rodriguez, who's a film, does all kinds of things in film, but it's absolutely brilliant interview, must listen. Robert stresses the emergence aspect of creativity, how you have to be doing something for the muse or the creative spirit to show up. And he also talks about the power of mistakes and things that at the time seem like a complete waste of time have turned into the best things that he's done. It's really a fantastic interview. He also just generally talks about the power of creativity across multiple spans of life and how important it is. So I'll link to that in the show notes, or just Google Tim Ferriss podcast plus Robert Rodriguez. Excellent, excellent show. So here's what you've sent me this week. Desiree Prosapio says, good morning. Here's my view as I drive and listen to your podcast in the Texas Hill Country. Lovely river picture. Monica Rodriguez says, listening this week while driving to and from work. No interesting pictures though. Marianne says, listen to your podcast while testing recipes for my next book, What to Cook for Dinner with Kids. Best fish cakes yet. And sent me some pictures of yummy fish cakes. They do look very good, Marianne. Pamela Olivia Brown says, listening to the podcast with Honoré Corda for the second time while exploring the wonderful world of ebook publishing. And welcome, Pamela. And I hope you do find your way into publishing. It's a very exciting time to be an author. SJ Pahonas says, here I am listening to you at the gym, and sent me an awesome picture of her lifting weights at the gym. Fantastic. Honoré, who was on the show last week, says, very surreal to listen to the Creative Pen this week, obviously, and it was running at the gym listening to her own interview, which is definitely weird. I never re-listen to things. Obviously, I have to listen to things when I do the editing, so I never listen to the recordings later. Catherine Lee says, listening to the show while enjoying my reward for writing 4,000 words today, and sent a picture of a yummy Danish pastry, which looked particularly good. Didn't really go with the fish cakes, though. But that sounds lovely, Catherine. Hannah says, your show is one of my favourites. Great advice and inspiration. Currently listening while wrapping up my workday in Panama. And I actually replied to Hannah and said, can you please send me a picture of Panama? And she sent one of overlooking the city. And I've never been to Panama. It's one of those places that it's kind of exists in your imagination because of the Panama hat and because of the canal. It's sort of one of those famous places. So I haven't been. Very cool to see a picture. Matthew says, listening to the show while driving to drop off books at a local independent bookstore. So fantastic. I guess, Matthew, you are selling your own books at the local indie store. Brilliant. And then a couple of emails were, I got one from Kristen, who says, my two favourite episodes were with Simon Whistler and Rosalind Ashford about audiobooks and ACX. In addition to being a writer, I also love acting, and these episodes inspired me to check out ACX. Since June, I've completed one book, I'm in the middle of another, and I have one more scheduled after that. Awesome. Kristen, I'm so super pleased. One of my missions in life is helping people discover new streams of income. And I think if you are an actor or somebody with a lovely voice who enjoys narration, narrating audiobooks is a really super thing to be doing. So that's brilliant. And then Han Hills says, I listened riding the ferry across to Bald Head Island in North Carolina to perform a wedding as a professional officiant, and sent a few lovely pictures of the trip over. Han says, on the ride over, I listened to the fascinating interview with Jeffrey Kafer on audiobooks, and his reading of my book One Day in New York is terrific, and she finds her mind continually drifting to the Cross Builder. And if you haven't listened to that book or read that book, I might just be crucifying a nun on the High Line in New York. I might just have done that. I'm just one of those people. Okay, so what are you doing while listening to the show, or has a particular podcast spurred you into action? Please do tweet me at The Creative Pen or email me, joanna@thecreativepen.com, and let me know, because I really enjoy the back and forth now of our podcast beginning. I really enjoy it. It's makes my week. Okay, so this podcast episode is sponsored by 99 Designs, and you can go to 99designs.com/Joanna, Joanna, for your free power pack upgrade. So I think one of the best uses of a marketing budget is a professional cover that resonates with your target market, and you can get book covers at 99 Designs. You can submit your project, and lots of designers will submit options, and you get to choose the one you like. And there's no risk with 99 Designs, as you only pay when you're happy with what is created, and you get loads of choice with multiple designers submitting work. So you get a full range of different people's brains, which is awesome. You can also get web page design for WordPress, social media banners and headers, as well as posters, postcards, flyers, email newsletter templates, t-shirts, mugs, and so much more. I definitely am considering mugs for creatives in some way. You can also get custom illustrations and other graphics, and I've used 99 Designs myself for a custom illustration of The Key to the Gates of Hell, which features on the cover and the inside of the print book of Gates of Hell, surprisingly enough. And that was super useful to me. I actually, when I described The Key to the Gates of Hell, I wrote the design into the book. So that was, it was just very, very cool to collaborate, like a kind of a collaboration between designing the key and my writing and the cover and everything. Love that cover. So you can get a power pack upgrade, which gives your project more chance of getting noticed with bold headers, highlighted background and featured listing by going to 99designs.com/Joanna. That's Joanna. And yeah, super. And remember, you can always redo your covers. I think I was talking to somebody about who had inherited an estate from their someone in their family died, and they'd got the rights to a whole load of books that, you know, were big back in the 60s or whatever. And, you know, I said, well, look, you know, read the books. Maybe they need an edit. Maybe they don't, you know, especially fiction. You can often, you know, just put fiction out, but definitely get new covers, because there's no way that covers designed back in the 60s are going to attract people now. So unless it's a kind of vintage look. So definitely redoing covers can revitalize an old backlist. Okay, so this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. A big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks especially to new patrons SJ Bahonas, Jonathan David Small, and Susie Hickson. And also thanks to all those people who have upped their pledge since I moved to a weekly show. And I do really appreciate the Patreon support. Like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates that people enjoy the show and want it to continue, and I am super excited about the engagement, so thank you so much. So on Patreon, you can support me with a few dollars, even just $1 a show, to a maximum of 2 shows a month. You can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, thank you. Let's get on to the interview. Hi everyone, I'm Joanna Penn from thecreativepen.com, and today I'm here with Ricky Wollman. Hi Ricky.
Hi Joanna, thanks for having me.
Oh no, it's great to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Ricky is the founder and CEO of Written Word Media, whose mission is to empower authors and publishers and help readers find their next great read. Ricky holds an MBA from Harvard and specializes in how to effectively and efficiently build an audience online, which is what everybody listening wants. So, Ricky, I'm so thrilled to have you on the show. So why don't you just start by telling us a bit more about your background in books and publishing?
Absolutely. So my expertise and background is really in customer acquisition and building audience. So as you mentioned, I do have an MBA. And after getting my MBA, I worked for The Body Shop, actually, which is a UK-based company that I admired for a very long time. And I ran their US and Canadian websites. And specifically, my job was to find customers, build email lists, and figure out how to engage with customers around the different products. So I have quite a few years of experience working in corporate America. And after doing that for a while, I decided to go out on my own and start a consulting company that was focused on helping startups and smaller brands find an audience and build an audience. And while I was doing that, my mom decided she was going to publish a book. So I started helping her through that process, getting the book formatted, getting it up on Amazon, and finally it was published. And we were very excited and said, hooray, the book's up, and kind of sat there waiting for things to happen. And crickets, yeah. Nothing happened. No reviews, no purchases. And so we quickly realized that just as with anything else, you have to market a book as you would a product or yourself or anything else really in today's world. And so around the same time, Amazon launched KDP Select, which I thought was a great idea because it came with the exclusivity, which was somewhat of a downside. But the upside was it gave authors 5 free promo days within a 3-month period. And so, I thought, hey, this is fantastic. We could make the book free, get tons of downloads, get reviews, and this is going to spur a lot of activity around the book. So I went ahead and did that, set the book to free and sat back and waited for the action. And once again, crickets. And I thought, this is crazy. This book is free. Why aren't more people downloading it? So I went to Amazon and looked on that given day at how many books were free, and there were over 5,000 books that were free. So just as we have the challenge of moving a book that's priced because there are hundreds of thousands of books, the same challenge was being posed even when the book was free. So I decided, okay, how can we solve this problem? Why don't I throw up a blog that focused specifically on free books and choose what I thought looked like the best 10 free books on Amazon on any given day. And that's really how Free Booksy was born. So I started doing that. It was really a side project every morning. It was a lot of fun. I would get up, choose the 10 books, put them up on the site, and then use a lot of the techniques that I had learned over the past 10 years to start building traffic and email, an email list and an audience for Free Booksy. And it worked. It was really exciting. Readers loved the service because they were as overwhelmed by the choice as anybody else. So, they wanted to try new books and new authors. But if they came to Amazon and they were faced with 5,000 books, they did not know where to start. And Free Booksy really helped that. It curated the selection for them. It helped to pare down the choice. And that was about 4 years ago. Free Booksy has grown dramatically since then. We have over 160,000 readers who use our service right now. The company has grown to Written Word Media, which has multiple websites that help readers find books and helps authors and publishers find a way to get the word out of their books. But that's a long-winded way of explaining how I got into book marketing and the book publishing industry today.
Wow, which is a brilliant story. And now we need to know what's happened to your mum. So is your mum like a multimillionaire now?
Well, she's not quite, because my mom publishes in a very niche genre. She does religion and spirituality fiction. So within those genres, she's doing okay. But it's not really a mass appeal, mass audience genre per se. But it's been a success for me in terms of being able to use her books to, guinea pig all of the things that we're trying out.
Well, that is brilliant. And the other thing we should say, if anyone's wondering, just explain where you're from and why you have a different accent.
Absolutely. So I was born and raised in South Africa, did all my schooling there until I was about 18 years old. And then I moved to the States and did college here. So I'm a bit of a hybrid. I've spent about half my life in South Africa and almost half my life in the US.
Yeah, I love the South African accent. It makes me feel really at home because in Australia I work with so many South Africans. But anyway, moving on. So Free Booksy is amazing. You've also got Bargain Booksy, you've got New In Books, you've got a whole load of sites now, which is brilliant. So what we're going to do is just dive down a bit. And of course, you've got this amazing marketing background. But we're going to do fiction first, then nonfiction. So what have you seen, maybe apart from Free Books or some of the things around Free Books, what actually works in selling fiction?
Sure. So first and foremost, and you talk a lot about this on your website, which is a great resource for authors, is to put in work before you actually publish the book. So books that do well tend to be those that have good editors, that they have people who have proofread them, that the covers look good and are professional. That's the baseline from which the book can take off. So it is really important, I think, for, you know, fiction and nonfiction alike, but specifically fiction, to make sure that the quality is there across all of those different things before the book is even published. Once the book is out, getting reviews on the book is pretty critical. What we've found that I personally found very interesting is that the number of reviews is actually more important than the overall review score. So what that means is, if you have 10 five-star reviews, that is actually less good from a reader perspective than having 50 reviews with an overall review score of maybe 3 or 3.5 stars. And we work with a lot of authors, and we know that it's very upsetting when maybe you don't get a 4 or 5-star review. But what I would say is take a step back and don't get too upset about that. Rather, try and get more reviews for your book. And the reason we think that this stat holds is because readers are a little bit skeptical of reviews sometimes. So when they see lots of really high rated reviews, but a small number, they kind of assume that, oh, it's the author's, you know, mom and sister and daughter who've reviewed the book. But once you get to 50, 100 reviews, then some of that skepticism goes away, and they know that some people are going to like the book and some are not. I mean, they're Pulitzer Prize winners out there that probably have overall review scores of maybe 3, 3.5. You know, it's not for everyone, but just having many reviews really helps to boost the credibility of a book and help the conversion rate of people now who are browsing the book to actually purchase the book. So I would say, you know, go after those reviews and try and get as many as possible as you can. The other thing that works really well is just you need to teach Amazon that your book is alive and well and what your book is about. And Amazon is all algorithm-based, as we all know. So what that means is they're just watching readers and consumers on their website and what are they clicking and what are they browsing, and they're using that to generate your recommendations. People who browse this also browse this. Oh, you might also like, and you see, you know, books and titles in there. The only way that they can actually surface your book as if they know something about your book. So you do need to get people going to your book and browsing and clicking and purchasing. One of the ways that most authors are doing this today is through price promotions, by making your book free or discounting it to drive some traffic there. But the same thing can be done by using the email lists of people that you have or any customer base that you have and sending them to Amazon to spur some of that activity.
So that's really interesting. I kind of knew that about reviews. And of course, it's difficult to get reviews, although you'll find, you know, obviously, you know, having a free book means you generally get more reviews. So I'm almost thinking I should, you know, sort of cycle round my free books so that each of them get more reviews on it. But what I was going to ask you there is genre. Now, a site like authorearnings.com is really saying that the big genres are, you know, romance, mystery, thriller, sci-fi, fantasy. Is this what you see in terms of your clicks through Free Booksy and Bargain Booksy? And what do you have any advice for literary fiction or, you know, anyone who's in the other niches?
Sure. So, yes, we do see a lot of the same stats that Authors Earning is showing. What we call our mass audience head genres are romance, mystery, fantasy, sci-fi. There is hope, though, if you're in a niche genre. It's just more about the expectations of the sales that you're going to see, because the audience just tends to be slightly smaller. But what we do is we actually, our lists are broken down by the genres that our readers are interested in. So we do have readers who like literary fiction, or who like, you know, children's books, or some of the niche genres. And when we send an email to them, they are more apt to download or purchase the book because they have opted into those specific genres. So that's the one thing I would say. The other thing I would say is the advantage to being in a niche genre is there's slightly less competition, because most people are publishing in the mass market genres because there's more money to be made. But if you're in a niche genre, you can try some more targeted advertising or reaching out more in a more targeted fashion to your audience. So for example, one of the things I really like, and this is both for nonfiction and for niche genres, is to use Facebook ads to target an audience who would be very interested in what your subject matter is. So for example, if you have a nonfiction book around, maybe spirituality, or, you know, how to feel better about yourself, you could go on Facebook and you could say, I want to serve these ads to people who like Eckhart Tolle, or, you know, some of those types of influences in that arena, because, you know, those people are more apt towards those books anyway. Whereas when you're in the mass market genres, it's a little bit more difficult. You can say, serve ads to people who like James Patterson, but because it's so broad and the audience is so big, it's actually not quite as targeted as you would be in some of those niche genres.
Mm. And of course, Eckhart Tolle is a non-fiction author, but what you're saying is, as a fiction author in the religious or spiritual niche, you could still target a non-fiction writer because people would be liking that type of stuff.
Exactly. You just got to think a little bit out the box and think about who is your reader and what personas, other books would they like, and then try targeting on those aspects instead of just trying to target on people who like nonfiction books, because again, that's so broad and everybody's targeting on that. So try to think about, you know, some other things.
It's funny you say that, because I just did a normal post on Facebook, and I posted some pictures. I went to a cemetery, Highgate Cemetery, last weekend, and I got the most engagement ever on my fiction author profile with these pictures of graves. And it made me realize, because I love graves, I'm a taphophile, as they're known, I love cemeteries, and I was like, oh my goodness, my audience like graveyards and cemeteries. So I could actually look at that type of thing, which is a little bit weird. Some people listening will be like, she's a weirdo. But that's the point. That's my fiction
audience.
That's
the point, right? Yeah. The people who think, oh, she's awesome, that's your audience. Those are the people who are going to read your books. It's perfect.
It is. So this is the thing. Think outside the box around themes and other stuff, not just, like you say, like James Patterson, like Lee Child, that type of thing. Yeah. Exactly. And I wanted to also ask you, because of your MBA background, you know, you're from quite, you know, traditional education and all that, and you have a broad range of business knowledge. What I find so interesting about authors is this is a business like any other, right? And do you know of any business where people would shy away from paying for marketing? And what I mean is, you know, authors make such a fuss about paying for Facebook ads or for free Booksy, which is, you know, free for some things, cheap for other things, bargain Booksy, you know. Why do you think this is an issue? And as I said, do you know any other business where people shy away from paying for advertising?
Well, I cannot think of any, except for maybe the government, and we're all legally obligated to pay our taxes and you know, file those forms and do all of those things, because you know, the outcome of not doing those things is jail or fines. So aside from government, you know, when it comes to actually, you know, commerce and the business world, it's kind of a given that you pay for marketing. Or, there are companies who really believe that they can get this organic growth or have these brand ambassadors or have a viral hit. And I can tell you, having worked in many different companies, it's very difficult to do. Mm. And the companies that do achieve that, usually it's by luck, not by planning, or because you can actually, you know, put enough resources behind it to guarantee something like that. So I think it's very important. It's a very, very, very important point that you're bringing up, that authors treat their books as a small business. And as in any small business, you need to be setting aside some percentage of your monthly expenditures towards marketing. Absolutely.
Mm. So then thinking about nonfiction, are there any things that stand out around, first of all, what type of nonfiction books are selling well? What kind of subgenres?
Sure. So weight loss books do very well with nonfiction. and interestingly, cookbooks do very well too. So we have both sides of areas of the spectrum. We do find, you know, weight loss cookbooks do well. And then also just general self-help titles, you know, how to be a better public speaker, how to be a better person, how to find inner peace. Those types of titles do pretty well with our nonfiction audience. What I will say about nonfiction when it comes to Amazon is that the algorithm is even more important there. And there are actually things you can do within nonfiction to boost your visibility by optimizing the keywords in your title and the keywords in your description. And then also doing this learning where, you get readers to click on other books that are similar and then purchase your books. You come up in the recommendations.
It's interesting. What about nonfiction book covers? Have you noticed, because what I've seen there's at the moment there seems to be the white cover with the big text, and then there's the color cover with image type thing. And I'm really attracted to the white covers, but they also look a bit funny on the Amazon background. So I'm wondering, do you actually see any book cover trends as such?
So we're seeing both of those types of covers. What we're seeing across the board is that the more professional the cover, the better the book does, the more likely it is that people are to click on it. So the white background books that you're talking about, if they look professional and looks like that was intentionally done that way, or if it has, a little like black border around it so it doesn't sink into the Amazon background, those do just as well as the color backgrounds. But we actually have one of our team members who's very interested in psychology, who's currently doing an analysis on the psychology of color as it pertains to book covers. So we're hoping we'll have that piece out in the next month or so, and we'll have some more insights around colors of book covers within the different genres that we can share with you.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Yeah. It's pretty fun. She's loving doing the research, so it's really...
One of the things that I certainly do, and I know many indie authors do, when we do like a free booksy or a bargain booksy promotion or a book bub or whatever, is we make sure that the book we're promoting has a call to action, like at the front and the back, for our email list. So given your, wide marketing knowledge, how important is it that the author do that? And have you noticed any other kind of best practices around email lists for authors?
Sure. I think it's critical that authors do that. I think it's the number one thing that I would tell authors as they're starting to build their brand and with the very first book that they put out is, please make sure at the end of the book you say, please visit my website, sign up for my email list, like me on Facebook, because that person has purchased the book. You've spent the marketing dollars to reach them, so you might as well get as much information and as much support from them as possible. And in general, readers are very generous. They appreciate authors. They appreciate the work they're putting out there. And so if they enjoyed your book, there's a good chance that they will sign up for your email address. The other thing is, I'm a huge fan of email lists because at that point, you actually own the reader. You no longer have to pay again to reach them on Facebook. You no longer have to pay again to reach them when your next book in the series or your next title comes out. So I would think about that email list as one of the most important assets you have as an author, and you want to continue to grow that asset and cultivate that asset because that's what's really going to help as you continue on this path as an author. As long as you're giving some value to the readers through your email list, they're going to be more than happy to stay on and stay subscribed to your email list itself. And many people find value just in hearing what you're up to. What are you writing about? What are the challenges of being an author? Because many readers wish they could be authors, wish they would have that kind of talent. And this is a way to, kind of live vicariously through the talents that authors like you have.
Which is really sweet. And I think people get so obsessed with thinking that there are so many authors around, but it's because we network with authors, whereas actually there aren't that many authors around in terms of the general public, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, yeah, you probably have a somewhat warped view of how many authors are out there. When I go to cocktail parties and tell people what I do, they get really excited and they say, oh, you get to work with authors. Do you meet authors? What are they like? What do they do? People get really excited about it. So you shouldn't discount that.
Yeah, it is an odd thing. You suddenly, you're like, yeah, it's not that big a deal. And then for some people, it really is. But no, that's very cool. I also wanted to come back to something you said about brands. You said, you know, thinking about yourself as like a small brand. Many people don't like the word brand, especially, you know, authors. It's all about creativity, not brands. What do you mean by a kind of a small brand for authors? And how does that relate to the type of books you write and how you promote?
Sure. So, you know, some authors tend to be more behind the scenes type of people, which is why they write. You know, they're not musicians or actors or want to be out there. So I understand why there's some discomfort around this idea of thinking about yourself as a brand. And that's okay. If that's uncomfortable, don't think of yourself as the brand. Think about your books as the brand. Okay. And you know, each title is kind of a different product within the brand umbrella that you have. The great thing about having a brand is that you get to spread the marketing spend and your investment across multiple different products. So that's why I think it's important to think of yourself as a small business and a small brand, because it helps you to figure out what your investment is doing over the long term. What we find, and I'm sure you know this as well, Joanna, is that the authors who are making a living doing this, the authors that are very successful at this, are the authors who have multiple titles. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to do really well just on one title. It's when you start having 5, 6, 10, 15 titles that you actually, as an author, start to be very successful. And the reason is because every time you're investing in an ad, or marketing one of your titles, it's having a halo effect on all the other titles, all the other products within your brand. And so I think that's why thinking about yourself as a brand is a smart way to go about marketing versus thinking about each title as, oh, I've released a new book and now I've released another book and now I've released another book. So if you can get past, you know, the stigma of brand and think about it as something positive, and I think it is positive. You know, being an MBA, being somebody who's worked in business world for a long time, brand is actually a very positive term. I think that would be a very helpful way for authors to think about it.
Mm. And I mean, at the end of the day, we've seen lots of things that show that readers don't buy based on publisher, do they? I mean, they might be loyal to a reader's, an author's name as a brand, but who knows who publishes a book anyway? Do you do any kind of pushes via the publisher name, or is it always by author?
It's always by author, by title, by genre. We do work with all the major publishers, or I should say not with three of the big five. We work with them. We do help them market their books. However, we don't say, hey, this is a, you know, Penguin book. This is a Random House book. This is a HarperCollins book. Mm-hmm. What we say is, hey, this is the new book by, you know, Debbie McEnroe or James Patterson or whoever it might be. And readers are very loyal to that person, to that author, to his and, you know, to his brand and this different series that they have out there.
Mm. And I mean, what we've noticed, I've noticed it more with BookBub, but what you're saying is exactly the same. Have you noticed the big publishers copying indies in that they are moving into these price promotions and the email list that used to be owned by indies are now, you know, big publishing is moving in? Do you see that?
Sure. I think indie publishing has done a lot of really positive things for the publishing industry as a whole. Just the fact that it's democratized the number of books that can be out there, I think, is a fantastic thing. And, you know, core to our belief is that books are a force for good in this world. So the more books that we can publish, the better off we are. But I also think that indie authors have helped kind of pull traditional publishers, you know, into the 21st century somewhat, and made them think about who they publish and how they publish and how they market in somewhat of a more modern fashion versus maybe how they were doing it 50 years ago.
Mm. And in terms of, you know, your background also in marketing and advertising in newspapers, magazines, any kind of offline media versus online media, do you see any value in having a review in a physical newspaper or a physical magazine in terms of sales?
It's very hard to measure. So I have a very distinct bias towards online marketing because it's measurable, and that's why I love it. You know, we can run an ad and we can see within 48 hours how it did. Did it give us email signups? Did it actually spur sales for us? That's not to say that some offline media doesn't have an impact and cannot be effective. it's just very hard to know how effective it is. So you might spend, you know, say you spend $100 online, you can say this $100 gave me X, Y, and Z. You can spend $100 and get three placements, and maybe you get X, Y, and Z, but you don't know which one of the three placements actually returned the results. So now when you have to go back and do it again, you know that you're investing at least $66 in something that maybe is not returning for you, but you don't know which one it is. So you have to spend the full $100 again. You can't get smarter and more efficient with your marketing spend. Offline marketing that comes, you know, quote unquote free, there's always going to be a time component to it. But if you can get a journalist in your local newspaper to cover you or do a story about you, I think is definitely worthwhile because it does raise awareness of you as an author. And we do know that the more people hear a name or see a book cover or see a title, the more likely they are to purchase it. There are a lot of studies that say, and when it comes to consumer goods, somebody has to see something seven times before they'll make a purchase, that first initial purchase, if they're not already a consumer of the brand. And I think the same is true of the author brand itself or a specific title that you're putting out there. So what I would say to authors is take the marketing dollars you have and put them towards online so you know what they're actually returning for you. And then some of the time resource that you have at hand, maybe use to work with journalists or some offline media where you can get some coverage and some exposure, but not at an actual dollar cost, more at a time cost.
So just wanted to come back on the email list thing and the customer engagement, because you're an expert in that, because I think there's building the list, which you can pay to build a list, you know, you can buy Facebook ads, you can have free books, whatever. So building a list is one challenge, but it can be done. The next challenge is, what the hell do you do with those people? And I think non-fiction authors, it's kind of easier because you can send out useful information like, oh, another recipe for your weight loss. But for fiction, it's actually really difficult. So what are some of your recommendations around customer engagement with readers?
Yeah. So first of all, I don't think you need to engage that often. I think engaging once a month or once every 2 months is enough. You just want to stay on the reader's radar. You definitely don't want to inundate them with an email every week. And I think that's good because it takes some of the pressure off of figuring out what content am I going to send to my readers this week. Mm-hmm. So first thing, kind of scale back. Just try and reach out to readers, let's say, on a monthly basis. Second, as we talked about before, you have something that readers want. You have a gift of writing. You're living this life where you are an author and you are creating these characters that they now feel a connection to. And so you basically have the inside scoop, as it were. It's almost like, if you're an actor in Hollywood and just part of being part of that world gives you some cachet. And so you should embrace that. And I think just sending out an email that tells people, what did you do this month? What new title are you working on? How are you thinking about plot and character? What does your writing schedule look like? Just a little bit of a glimpse into your world. Readers find that very, very interesting. Another way to engage with readers is if you do want feedback, or if you're working on a certain part of the book, or you've got some piece of content that you'd like feedback on, let them read it and then say, what do you guys think? You know, and it could be a poll or it could be write me back, but it gives readers a feeling of being part of the process. And what I love about that is that when the book is then published, they're going to take that book and feel even more connected to it, because they say they'll read it and they'll recognize that paragraph and they'll be like, I gave feedback on that paragraph. I told her what I thought about that. And I think that's a very powerful thing in today's world of publishing, is that without giving up your creative autonomy as an author, you can still make readers feel involved. And what I'm not saying here is don't crowdsource your content, don't have readers tell you what to write, but make them part of the process a little bit, make them part of your feedback loop. The other thing that I'm loving right now is Instagram. And it's a very easy way to engage with readers that's got a pretty low time commitment from an author perspective. So your example is perfect. You were out and about, you saw a cemetery, you know, you take a snap, you load it up to Instagram, and that way readers can kind of see where you are, see what you're doing, and it's visual. So you don't have to spend time thinking about what am I going to now write to my readers? How am I going to explain this? It's a picture's worth a thousand words. And so all you need to do is put that picture up, and it's a way for readers to still feel connected to you. And then in your monthly email newsletter, it could just be your top 9 Instagram pics from that month and what you were doing. So it's a way to leverage some of the work that you're doing all the way through the month in a monthly newsletter without having to spend a whole lot more time trying to figure out what to say.
Super advice. And I must say, one of the things I always do in my monthly newsletters is some pictures of what I've been doing, because I do think that people love that. On that, I use Twitter for my stuff. I don't use Instagram, although I keep considering it. It just feels like another thing. Mm-hmm. But I know you're really across all the platforms. What do you see happening? I mean, Twitter for me is mainly connection with peers and, you know, influencers. But now I'm thinking, you're right, you know, is it that the readers are on Instagram, or, you know, where should people be choosing to spend their time in social media?
Sure. So I think you're right. Twitter, from my perspective, is more of a B2B, a business-to-business platform. So it's great for connecting to other authors, connecting with, you know, publishers, connecting with promo sites like us, kind of connecting with people within the publishing industry. There are some cool things you can do on Twitter to reach readers. You know, like there's the Friday Reads hashtag that you can piggyback on, and there's some hashtags like that. But to be honest, I think the effectiveness is lower than on some of the other social platforms. I think Instagram is going to be huge over the next year. I think we're already seeing that the user base is growing dramatically. The engagement is very high. And as there's some of this decline on Facebook organic, I think Instagram is picking up that slack. And people who are kind of tired of talking to everybody on Facebook are more inclined to go to Instagram, because it's kind of bite-sized. Instagram is like a snack. You know, whereas Facebook sometimes feels like a meal. And so you can go to Instagram and you can just scroll through 3 or 4 pictures. And because it's visual, it's light, it's inspirational. And with our own sites, we're seeing a lot of traction there. New In Books, which is one of our new sites, we launched an Instagram account a month ago. We have over 4,000 followers, and they're highly engaged with us. You know, they're liking our pictures. They're talking to us in the comments. So I think for authors, it's the perfect platform. Because as I said, it's low time commitment. It is a consumer audience, a reader audience, and there are different hashtags around books and reading that you can piggyback on to start getting an audience. And so I would encourage you to take a look at that. I know there's a lot that's going on. And again, you don't have to post every day on Instagram. You could post, you know, 2 or 3 times a week, just when inspiration strikes you, when you see something really cool. When you're sitting at your desk, you just take a little snap of, you know, what does your desk look like when you're writing? Maybe it's just your computer screen. That is inspirational. You know, you put a filter on there and it looks really pretty, and people will respond to that. So I think Instagram is huge, or will be this year. I think Facebook ads still are the most effective platform for authors and people looking to reach consumers. And Facebook's doing a really, I know you're pretty interested in big data and some of the trends around that. And I think Facebook's doing a fantastic job of using all of their data to continually make their ads more and more effective. So we spend a lot on marketing every month to continually grow our lists, and 95% of our ad spend is on Facebook, because we're finding that's where it's the most effective. So if you're going to be looking to spend, I would say Facebook is the place to be. If you tried it a year ago and it didn't work for you, try it again, because as I said, their algorithms have changed a lot, and they're using their data very effectively.
Oh my goodness, now I have to do Instagram. I am interested. Do you know a scheduling tool for Instagram? Because I do a lot of scheduling of my social media in batches. Otherwise, I just get overwhelmed.
Sure. So Hootsuite just rolled out a scheduling component. You still can't, it doesn't post automatically, but what you can do is schedule it out, and then it'll shoot you an email and say it needs to go up, and then you press a button and it actually loads up into Instagram. Instagram is still in its infancy. They just opened up their API, which is why Hootsuite now has it. They've just started to open up the API for different brands to start running ads. So, you know, Instagram is today probably where Facebook was 4 or 5 years ago. So it's going to take a little bit of time for them to catch up. However, as I said, I think in the next 6 to 12 months, you're going to see a lot of that functionality improve.
Don't Facebook own Instagram as well?
They sure do. They don't like to advertise that, but they sure do. It's a very smart purchase on their part. So all those, you know, 18 to 35 who no longer want to use Facebook because their parents and grandparents are on it are now using Instagram. And that's why I think we are going to see the sea change in terms of the engagement activity on Instagram. Versus,
oh, wow. That, yeah. And I know some people listening are like, yeah, but I do YA. Where are the 18-year-olds and the 16-year-olds? Are they on like Snapchat or other things, or where are they?
They're on Instagram. Is a good place to go. If you in YA, I would go Instagram before Facebook. They're on Snapchat, but Snapchat's hard to use as a marketing tool because it's really more one-on-one communication, and the communication disappears to some degree. There are some interesting things happening with Snapchat where they're trying to make the content a little bit live longer, and especially with the elections coming up in the US next year, we're starting to see that some of the candidates and some of the, you know, the parties are trying to figure out how to crack the Snapchat nut. So we're watching that carefully to then see where there'll be opportunities for authors. Right now, it's fairly time consuming and it's kind of difficult. So I would go, you know, Instagram 1, Facebook 2 for YA. And actually, I'd probably say it's about that, maybe reverse, maybe Facebook 1, Instagram 2, if you're doing a mass market genre like romance or mystery.
Mm. And of course, you realize if the Americans elect Donald Trump, we won't be speaking to you anymore.
Well, I'll probably be moving to the UK, so we'll get to do this in person next time.
Yay! Anyway, enough on politics. I have two more questions. One is the global, you know, what's happening globally. I'm somebody who's always going on about the fact that the US market is mature, as we know, with ebooks, but look at the rest of the world. I mean, I sell a couple of ebooks a month in South Africa. I'm selling in sub-Saharan Africa. I'm selling in Asia, South America. What do you see as the global reach of digital, and how many years off are we from the rest of the world being as mature as the US market?
I don't have a specific answer in terms of years for you. You know, we're very focused on the US market. I do think that there's growth coming globally. The interesting dynamic that's going on globally is that in the US, it's always been ebooks specifically are device-based. And as we know, the Kindle has the vast majority of the share. You know, Nook try to take some of the share for a time there, but that's starting to decline. Whereas in the rest of the world and emerging markets specifically, everybody reads on their phones, right? They're not buying devices per se. So the big question for me is, are they going to download the Kindle app? You know, is Amazon going to win and just have people reading on the Kindle app on phones? Or is some other company or other app going to emerge? You know, Kobo is actually doing a fairly good job, I think, of that, and people are starting to read and download the app in emerging markets. But I think the reason the market isn't super mature is because it's very fragmented right now, and there's not one place you can go to publish your book and reach those readers. Not even Amazon has that kind of reach. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens there. But I do think when we see that shift, it'll happen quickly. We're already seeing the adoption of mobile devices grow exponentially. So once there are a couple of reading apps out there that start to take off, I do think that we'll start seeing authors being able to reach maybe other countries and other readers more effectively.
Mm, and actually, interesting as you say that, I'm thinking with Facebook, you know, the internet.org thing, you know, they're trying to do, you know, yes, worldwide internet. They also want to do a cheap phone, right, with Facebook as the browser. So will Facebook get into book marketing? I see this week they've restarted the notes function, which is like mini blogging. And of course, Google Android would be the other cheap phone. So are we going to see Facebook publishing or Google as the emerging?
I think that's very possible. And I, you know, Mark Zuckerberg this year for his New Year's resolution, he picked books. So every year he picks a resolution of something he's going to do for the year. One year it was he was going to learn Mandarin. One year he was going to wear a tie every day. You know, he just kind of picks these personal challenges. But this year he picked reading, and he said he was going to read a new book every 2 weeks. So he's going to read 26 books in total, and he's been doing it. He puts us all to shame. These are all, you know, pretty dense, like,
they're hardcore books. They're not like fun
books. If you go, we do have a website, ayearofbooks.net, where we're following all of the books that he's reading, because there are a lot of people who are interested, and the topics are really interesting that he's picking. But, you know, if I had to guess, I would say it's probably not a coincidence that he picked books this week, and I'm sure that they're thinking about how do they get more involved in reading and books, especially globally. So Facebook, Google, definitely going to be players, and there's the name is escaping me, but there's the company Flipkart in India. I think they have a good chance of taking some of the market as well, because that's where a lot of people purchase their physical books in India. So my guess is they'll come up with something mobile pretty soon.
And people can get into Flipkart through Smashwords at the moment, but exactly. I'm hoping they'll have a direct purchase place, because I would go direct on Flipkart, I think. And then I guess the other thing I was going to ask you is about the emergence of big data, machine learning, AI in the algorithms particularly, but some more of this kind of marketing information. And I know your husband is into big data, as is my husband, so we're like geeks. But what do you see that really changing the way things work? Will it just get more granular, do you think?
So I think the story is always going to be important when it comes to the writing aspect of it. Where I think AI is and machine learning and big data is really going to have an impact is in the effectiveness of marketing. So because we can be much more granular in targeting, because Facebook and Google and all these companies now have data that they can mine on who are the most receptive consumers on the web, what we're going to continue to see is that marketing gets more effective, hopefully a little bit cheaper, as some of these tools start to mature.
Fantastic. We're both very positive about the future, aren't we?
We are. I mean, you know, I'm not one of those people who are scared of robots. I think...
Nor me. I think it's going to be awesome.
I think we've got a lot of really positive, exciting technological innovations ahead of us. And I think they're going to help humankind, not hurt it.
And in particular, for me, the big data point of this is the ultimate data is the book. Like, when we don't have to type in 7 keywords and we don't have to pick 2 categories, but they can actually index the whole book and intelligently... categorize that's going to be so much better, isn't it?
Absolutely. It's going to be an amazing day, and it's going to help readers find the exact books that they want. It's going to help authors market their books more effectively. It's going to be wonderful.
I think so. That's what I'm waiting for, is that day. So we'll both be there, won't we?
Maybe your husband can work on that.
Yeah. I'll get him onto it. Brilliant. Well, look, it's been amazing to talk to you. Tell people where they can find all the useful things you have for authors online.
Sure. So the best place to start is writtenwordmedia.com. There you'll see all of the 5 different sites that we have. And then if you are an author and you're trying to figure out, you know, which is the right site for you, the way to think about it is, if you're running a free promotion and your book is free, then go to freebooksy.com. If your book is priced under $5, whether you're running a price promo or if it's just regularly priced, you know, under $5, then bargainbooksy.com is the place to go. And then if you have a new title coming out, it really has to either be out in the last 30 days or, you know, coming out so you can schedule it. Newinbooks.com is a site that enables you to get your brand new book in front of an avid audience of readers. And the book does not need to be discounted and can be in any format, paperback, hardcover, or Kindle.
Oh, wow. That is a good one. That is a good one to add to the list. That's fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Ricky. That was amazing.
Thank you, Joanna. It's been a lot of fun.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes at thecreativepen.com/podcasts. You can also get your free author 2.0 blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at thecreativepen or find me on Facebook at thecreativepen. See you next time.